1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline and Joe at RT.ie. Yesterday we began the programme with a call from Catherine about products she bought from beautyshop.ie, obviously an online cosmetics, perfumes, skin treatments, skin creams, serums, selling branded products at very reduced prices, which of course is a great thing to do, very reduced prices. But Catherine was not happy with one particular product, and there has been a major development now in the last few minutes. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. Can you just remind listeners what was the product, why you bought it, and what you discovered when it arrived from beautyshop.ie?
Yeah, so the product was CE Ferulic by SkinCeuticals. Mm-hmm. And when it arrived and I opened it, the colour and the consistency was different to when I had bought it before.
Okay, and we had other people contacting us saying, giving different descriptions of what came out of the bottle. Now, the reason you bought it, one, why were you using it in the first place when you bought it originally, and the price of that, and this product you bought from beautyireland.ie? Why were you using it originally?
So originally I was using it because I was left with a little bit of discoloration on my face after chemo and radiation. So I just wanted to kind of fade that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had used it before for, you know, freckles that had developed
yeah.
during summertime as well. And, you know, any time that I developed any pigmentation. So it was brilliant. So that's why I bought it.
And you've paid how much from the company itself through their website or through a sales website?
Through beautyshop.ie, I paid €117 when it was normally €150 when I used to buy it in the salon.
And as I said yesterday, when we opened the beautyshop.ie website, it was on the front page of the website, they had it down for £59.95, which would be mm-hmm. one-fifth nearly of what you would originally paid for it. But you ended up not using the 117 beautyshop.ie product. And I can tell you, I know it wasn't your sample that was sent to the HPRA, but as you say, I read out a statement from the HPRA, because we, a number of other people as well, hopefully alerted them to this. And this is what the HPRA, which is the Health Products Regulatory Authority of the Irish Government, subsequent to yesterday's programme, the RP, which is the responsible person, which we presume in this case is the original manufacturer of the 160 skin cuticles, which worked for you. The RP was in contact with the HPRA to inform us that they have reason to believe the product in question is counterfeit. On foot of this, the HPRA has now requested the distributor to suspend the sale of this product from their website. To date, the HPRA has not received any reports of undesirable effects associated with the product. It is important that members of the public report, obviously, undesirable effects to us. The HPRA has had a safety-based testing of the product carried out, and has been advised that there's no excess levels of unsafe substances that were tested for. And they test for, this is on their website, they test for heavy metals, arsenic and lead. That's what they tested for. Well, in the product you got, if it's the same, I know it's your product is not the one that was sent to them, but you could argue that you have to send every single bottle. But this is a statement from the HPRA. They've asked beautyshop.ie to suspend the sale of this product from their website immediately. In the course of the investigation, the HPRA has not identified a physical warehouse or retail outlet in Ireland for beautyshop.ie, neither have we. This is Liveline, and Fergus is upstairs still working on it. He has more addresses, and the Tom's directory is Tom from beginning to end. But knowing Fergus, he will find out. For this reason, say the HPRA, it has not been possible to physically quarantine product under investigation. As advised by the Consumer and Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, CCPC, another government organisation, consumers should be aware that if a website ends in .ie, it does not necessarily mean it is based in Ireland. So they're saying, one, they've been told that the sample, the HPRA, sent to the responsible person as per the EU legislation, they have come back to say, we've reason to believe that sample you sent us is counterfeit. On foot of that, the HPRA haven't looked for every single sample from beautyshop.ir to be tested. The HPRA have decided and requested the distributor to suspend the sale of this product from their website immediately. But they cannot find a physical warehouse or a retail outlet in Ireland. But we can't even find, as we discovered yesterday, the person, a man called Graham, who's behind when people put up negative reports on various websites. He got very upset with them, and he sent them emails, or indeed contacted them by phone, which is unusual in itself that he had their phone number. But I remember he also said to us yesterday, unsolicited, that he knows five members of the RTE staff that have used this product without complaint. Now, and he then, by the way, unsolicited, gave us five names, which we promptly threw in the bin because we wouldn't be allowed to even look at those names. So the HPRA have said, Catherine, that the product they got from beautyshop.ie, which is not the bottle you got, we know that, but they're saying it's counterfeit. What does that mean to you? It means your suspicions are validated.
Yeah, I'm just so glad that I didn't actually use that product, because my skin was already sensitive enough, so I can only imagine what could have happened if I did use it, you know? So I'm kind of glad as well that I've kind of been vindicated in my complaints, because I did put up a complaint about them on Trustpilot. And, like, they threatened to sue me, and, you know, I was nervous because, like, I was like, oh, my God, can they? But then I was like, but sure, it's only defamation if it's not true. And what I had described was completely true, you know. So, yeah,
as I say, subsequent to yesterday's programme, this is the HRPA saying, we've reason to believe the product in question is counterfeit. We've asked the distributor to suspend the sale of this product from their website. Now, I don't know who they asked, because they then said they investigated the distributor and they can't find them. They can't find a warehouse or they can't find a retail outlet in Ireland. And the HPRA actually bought the product, they say, from beautyshop.ie, and they tested the product and this is the result. In other words, the conclusion our producers are coming to, that whole batch on beautyshop.ie is likely to be contaminated, and that's why the HPRA are saying it's likely to be counterfeit, and that's why the HRA are requesting them to suspend the sale of this product from their website. I don't know how you do that, because we have been, even though they have a most fantastic website, as I say, I ask people to look at it see what they think of it, and very incredible prices. But we can't actually get a physical address for anyone connected with it. We can't get a phone number. We have a couple of phone numbers, but they don't relate to any of the individuals that spoke to us. They may relate to some of their relatives. So we're no further down the road except to say that the government agency in charge of health products has said that the... this product is, they've reason to believe the product in question is counterfeit, so don't buy that particular product. Now, we have a whole list of people who contacted us this morning of other products, but again, we have to investigate them. It takes a bit of time before we can get them on air. But well done, Catherine, for bringing that to our attention. And it's not over yet, because we're still looking for that man, Graham, to come. He did contact us after the programme yesterday in an email and said we'd got it all wrong and we had defamed him and whatever else. But he hasn't replied to our request for him to come on air. OK, Catherine, stay well, stay safe. And thanks indeed. Joe at rte.ie, 51551, wash your hands. And remember, 1850 715 815. Now to a completely different issue. Tom Brophy. Tom, good afternoon. Why did you contact us, Tom?
Good afternoon, Joe, and thanks for taking my call. Sadly, Joe, our father, Mick, passed away there on Thursday the 13th of May in St. Vincent's University Hospital in Ellen Park, Joe.
Yeah.
He had taken ill early on the Tuesday morning and had been brought by ambulance to Kilkenny Hospital from his home here in Carlow.
Okay.
on Tuesday evening, then we would have got a call as a family to come down to Kilkenny because he had a blockage in his bowel. And said they couldn't operate in Kilkenny because he had a heart issue, Joe, which they said was too risky, but that the operation could be done in St. Vincent's.
Okay.
He was brought to St. Vincent's late on Tuesday evening and operated on early Wednesday morning. But sadly, he went straight from there to the ICU, Joe, and we had to turn off, I suppose, what you'd call the life support early Thursday morning.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Recent enough, and obviously very stressful for the family. Yeah. I have two brothers and a sister as well. So I suppose the issue we have, Joe, which has caused us upset, is his bag is missing. We would have had a bag. My dad would have been old school in terms of hospitals, which he wasn't in very much, thank God. But he would have been very much straight away on the Tuesday morning, pack a bag, you know, a few clothes, a towel, and probably his wallet and his phone would have been with him. Now, we've been assured by Kilkenny, and I think, as we understand it, they've been in touch with the National Ambulance Service to say that his bag was definitely brought to St. Vincent's. Now, I suppose, in terms of the care in St. Vincent's, as a family, Joe, we've no issues. The staff in the ICU were fantastic. No issues, and we appreciate the very stressful and difficult job to do in theatre and in A&E. But I suppose our frustration, Joe, and our concern is that we surely can't be the first that have experienced this. His bag is missing. I've contacted, my brother Gerard had contacted security. I contacted the ICU department. I contacted the admissions department. And I personally spoke to a girl in the quality and patient safety department earlier this week. Very frustrating for us to have to try and do this, I suppose, Joe. And as of today, I've received an email back, no phone call from anybody, just an email saying, you know, basically, we're really sorry, we cannot locate the bag.
And you've given them a description of the bag.
It's a black hold-all bag, Joe, yeah, kind of one you would carry on to a plane, I suppose.
Okay, no, there's no football or county colours on it or...
No, there's a green stripe on it, Joe, and look, being honest, there may be a logo on it, but we can't recollect.
Remember,
he would have had a couple of bags.
His wallet is gone. Do you know what was in his wallet?
Yeah, definitely his bank card was in it, and it's likely cash was in it.
Okay.
Not sure after that, Joe, because...
Driver's license, a credit card with his name on it.
He didn't have a credit card, but possibly driver's license could have been in it. Our dad was old school, Joe. He would have kept... very simple, and he wouldn't have carried jewellery or anything like that, you know. So.
The mobile phone, would it have been turned on? Did anyone ring it?
We didn't even think of that, Joe, being quite honest, but my brother did do a very quick online, a particular website showed that it was Ellen Park, which is St. Vincent's.
So the phone was definitely located in Ellen Park?
Definitely located in Ellen Park, yeah.
And in terms of the belongings, was obviously there were clothes and... overnight items, but did he have a wedding ring or a watch or medals or scapulars?
No wedding ring that we know of, Joe. My sister Michelle would have packed the bag quite quickly on the Tuesday morning. He would have been giving us orders as he did while we were waiting for the ambulance. We're not 100% sure, Joe. That's the concern as well. There was definitely a towel in it. There would have been clothing, just, you know, as I said, a pyjamas, underwear, socks, his wallet and his phone. That's as much as we know. But
carry his wallet with him? Like, was he a man?
Yeah.
For years and years and years?
Yeah, he was, Joe. He was old school. Yeah. As I said, he would have carried his wallet with him everywhere he went. He would have had his mobile phone with him everywhere he went. And I suppose they're very personable things for us now as a family, and it's very distressing for us.
It's of personal. Now, was there any photographs in the wallet? Do you know?
No, not that I'm aware of, Joe. Again, not that I'm aware of. But again, I wouldn't have had access to his wallet. It was personal to him. I'd be very sure there would have been cash in it. I'd be very sure his bank card would have been in it. And after that, we're not sure.
Surely the sting is that the phone using that website was located in Ellen Park.
Yes, that's the sting, absolutely, Joe. And like I said earlier, you know, we as a family, we very much appreciate the difficult and stressful job that people have, and when yeah, people are under pressure in these situations. But I mean, for a bag just to go missing, to disappear.
Now, there was no, was there any mention, Tom, of COVID and the COVID regulations? Because I know at the height of the pandemic, around this time last year, and again in January, this time last year, and again in January this year, COVID funeral regulations were very strict, and people, the remains of loved ones were being removed fairly quickly from nursing homes and hospitals. And oftentimes, individual items could, through no one's fault, go missing. People buried with wedding rings that the family wanted to hold on to and things like that. Sure. There was no mention of the COVID meant that we had to move very quickly when, unfortunately, your father passed.
No, nothing like that, Joe. The only thing we do know as a family is when we were in A&E in Kilkenny on the Tuesday evening in the resource room, his bag was definitely there. Because I distinctly remember him asking me to put his slippers into the bag, which I done.
Okay.
Obviously, in our distress, we wouldn't have noticed if the bag was taken out with him when he was gone to the ambulance.
I just wonder, is there a lost and found in St. Vincent's Hospital?
This is it. I mean, if there
is...
It's a big,
it's a city in there. It's a massive
complex.
Yes. Now, it's run very well, and all the staff across the board are fantastic. But it would security have a lost and found? Would security have CCTV?
That's the thing I was thinking, and we were thinking as a family, Joe, surely there has to be CCTV somewhere to show the bag definitely left Kilkenny. Or I don't know, in terms of the ambulance service, is there CCTV or security in the ambulance to show the bag definitely was in the ambulance or definitely went into Vincent's? We don't know. We just know that it was definitely in the resource in Kilkenny, and the quick online tracker thing that my brother done showed the phone in Ellen Park.
Okay.
And we've been informed by Kilkenny in consultation with the National Ambulance Service that the bag definitely went to Dublin.
Okay, but you've been informed by Ellen Park. Unfortunately, that they can't find it.
They can't find it.
Your dad's name was Michael.
Yes, Mick.
And Mick. And had he been unwell, Tom?
I suppose he got some last year, Joe. He had a bit of a rough year, I suppose. Last year, he got pneumonia around the time of the height of COVID. And I remember at the time, as a family, which was kind of strange, being glad our dad had pneumonia and not COVID. So he recovered from that, but... Yeah, unfortunately, then maybe a month, 2 months later, he got some heart trouble, so he had to get a defibrillator fitted. So he had a tough time of it between April and, I suppose, July last year. But he was coming out the other side, and he was going quite well, Joe. And, you know, outside of, I suppose, COVID and concerns about contracting COVID and that, he was doing pretty good. Sadly, this came out and over. It's a big blow to us as a family, Joe, because we lost our mum to a stroke. She was only 64, nearly 5 years ago now. So, you know, it's been very stressful and very tough on us as a family. And I suppose this issue, we're concerned, Joe, not just for ourselves, but who else has experienced this? I mean, how widespread is this issue? That's our concern, you know.
Yeah, okay. Again, condolences on Mick's passing. There's no photograph of the bag, is there, when he was on a holiday with it, or...
We're going to have to search for that, actually, Joe. That came to mind as well now that, I mean, I just got this email this morning from Vincent, so we'll have to do a search and see somewhere can we find a photograph of the bag, which obviously would be very helpful, you know.
Okay, Susan is on the line, Joe at RTE.ie. Susan, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Susan.
I'm just ringing because I had a similar issue last year with my husband, who was in Vincent's Hospital. And unfortunately, he died. And,
sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And over the time of the last 24 hours when I was keeping vigil, I kept asking about an overnight bag which had sentimental value, but also it had all his underwear, his change of pyjamas, his towels. And the ward kept saying, no, can't find it. I described it very clearly. And I just kept on asking. And eventually a nurse found it in a storage room where they store things like, you know, crutches and, and you know, the little kind of rollators and things like that. And there it was, and everything was in it. And it just might mean that looking at some other place where it wouldn't normally be thought of.
Then the problem at the minute is, or the challenge at the minute is, Tom, that one, they're so busy, and two, that visiting is very, very restricted. So in terms of even you saying, can we go in and have a look around? Susan, was your husband's phone in his bag?
No, his phone wasn't in his bag, but he had actually lost the phone. When I tried to ring him, I couldn't.
He lost the phone.
His phone went missing the day before he actually took very ill. So I kept asking about the phone.
Was he in St. Vincent's University Hospital when the phone went missing?
Yes, yes.
And did you report that his phone is gone?
Yes, and I came in and I brought in another phone, and like that too, nobody could find the phone, but he had been down in radiology, and we thought that over the weekend it might turn up in radiology, and it didn't. Nobody could find the phone, but as I said, there was no money or no driving license or anything in the overnight bag, but so all his other effects were in the overnight bag. And as I said, the nurses said, yes, we've looked and we can't find it, but they actually eventually did find it in a storage room. And what had happened was my husband was moved from one ward to another, and they hadn't brought the bag with them.
But do you know where his phone was when it disappeared?
No.
Was it in his bedside locker?
No, he thought it was on his bed. And then he went down to radiology, and he thought then that they might have taken it off the bed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that it was immaterial. It would have been nice to get the phone back, but I'm just kind of concerned in terms of Tom and his father's bag, that it may actually be in a storage room off the last ward he was in.
Yeah, and what they've told me is, I suppose, in terms of the email that I got this morning, Joe, is that they've linked in with the security team and made them aware of the situation. What does that mean, you know?
Did you get anyone, as they say, Susan, which Tom's from, to try and ping the phone to try and find out where the phone?
No, my husband was a great man for turning off his phone when he didn't when he didn't need it. For that reason, no point in trying to ping the phone. But I did ask that people would check in radiology and that people would check around, but nobody found it after that.
John is on the line. Joe at rt.ie 1850 715 815. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
What hospital are we talking about?
St. Luke's, Kilkenny.
Okay, what happened?
My mother went in and she had a fall. She went into hospital.
Okay.
That's been with her that day. And I got back as far as the Fox and Goose coming out of Kilkenny when the nurse rang me that her breathing was gone. She passed away that night at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And we never seen sight or sound of her wedding ring, not none of her jewellery.
Her wedding ring?
Yep. She had her wedding ring on her every day after my father died.
Of course, yeah. And what was she wearing it when she passed?
Oh, yeah. She wore her jewellery. She wore her wedding ring every day after my father died.
So who took her wedding ring? No, you don't know, but...
We don't know. We never seen it.
But the wonder... it's not in this case, but generally, do undertakers remove wedding rings when they're embalming or anything? Do they? I don't know. We'll ask an undertaker.
Can I just come in again there?
Yes, please do,
yeah. My mother died a number of years ago in St. James's Hospital, and we were actually phoned from the mortuary that the mortician said that I have your mother's wedding ring on. Would you like to come and collect it?
Okay, that's
so
lovely,
that
yeah.
Very often it's the mortician who is the first person who might notice it. And as I said, we were phoned and I was able to go into the ward at the time and collect it.
Yeah.
So maybe worthwhile checking the mortuary.
No, but John, how long ago was this, John?
It's over 10 years ago, Joe.
Dear. All right.
And was the wedding ring inscribed?
No, just ordinary yellow gold.
And was it of any, apart from the
price? It was her thing from, yeah, from her husband.
So it was priceless to you and your family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, John. Thanks, Susan, and condolences. And indeed, Tom as well, Tom Brophy. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Margaret Fitzharris. Margaret, good afternoon. By the way, where did you, I'm very sorry what's happened to you, Margaret, but where did you come across this gimmick of poaching your egg in a microwave? Where did you first discover this?
On YouTube, Joe.
Okay.
And it's actually still on it, because that's why I'm reading it. But I actually did it quite a few times. And,
okay. Explain what you do.
You put the boiling water into a half, you half fill your cup with boiling water.
Okay.
And you crack your egg into that then.
Okay.
And put it in the microwave for 20 seconds.
Okay.
But I obviously I had done it quite successfully a lot of times, and it's very convenient way of doing it. But this day I must have left it on a bit too long. Now, my microwave was manual, you know. So when I took it out, it exploded in my face.
Oh, God.
Every drop of water in that cup hit my face, and I got second-degree burns. It was horrific now, the pain of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, none of the egg went on my face or the cup. I dropped that to the floor and I screamed with the pain.
And what do you remember of the explosion, Margaret?
I just opened the door, took out the cup.
You put in your hand, you lifted the cup with the handle, obviously.
Yes.
You removed it out of the door of the microwave. How soon did it explode?
Just as soon as I took it out.
As it hit the air outside.
I obviously maybe just took it out at the wrong point. Maybe it would have exploded in the microwave if I hadn't to take it out. I don't know. But just at the point of me taking it out, it exploded in my face.
And what did you think had happened to you, Margaret?
Well, I got such a shock. I knew what happened. I just dropped the mug and I ran to the bathroom,
mm-hmm,
and filled the washhand basin with water. But luckily my husband John was right beside me, so but he got an awful shock. But I told him to fill a bowl with cold water and put it into the washhand basin. I had to put my face down into it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't take my face out with the pain.
Oh,
and
my God.
I was there for about an hour and a quarter with my head stuck in the water, because the only way it could ease the pain. So, my husband didn't know what to do. He told me after I told him, he was next to useless. But he rang our daughters, which didn't. One of them is actually a nurse in London.
Okay.
So I said, what use have you ringing them? But my other daughter, Aoife, he rang her and she made an appointment with the doctor. And my daughter-in-law lives down the road, Suzanne. She was terrific. Now, she came up and took me to the doctor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I said I wouldn't wish the pain on my worst enemy.
And would you not have gone to a Burns, to a hospital?
Well, of course, that was our key. I tell you, I was very nervous. It happened to me in March, first week in March, you know, and I was very nervous of the hospitals.
The COVID.
The COVID numbers were very high at the time.
Your husband would have looked at your face when the explosion. What did he say when he saw your face?
Well, at the time, of course, it was just all red and raw. And I just said, go away. I just want to keep my face in the water, because it was the only thing that would ease the pain at the time. And
I'm looking at the photographs here. They're unbelievable.
Yes, I got second-degree burns and all my skin peeled off.
Your forehead, your nose, your cheeks, your lips, your chin, your jaw. What about your eyes?
You know, a lot of people said that to me, but on impact, I must have closed my eyes with the shock.
Yeah,
because my eyelids were burned and they peeled. You know, so I must have closed my eyes with the shock for good luck.
Okay. Four hours later, how were you?
Now, the doctor wanted me to go to hospital, because of the COVID, I said I'm nervous. So she said if it doesn't ease off in an hour, I was to go to the hospital. But it did ease off. She gave me a good cream and painkillers and that, you know. So it did. But as it turned out, a week later, I had to go to the hospital because cellulitis, which is an infection set in under the skin.
So I had
to go down to Waterford Regional then, all right, you know.
But when you get a burn, it can get worse as the hours go on. Like, how did you manage that night in bed, sleeping, for example?
But, you know, that's why I didn't go to the hospital, because the pain did actually... It must have been the length of time that I kept it under the water. Actually, by the time I came out of the doctor's, the pain started to ease off. And it was horrific looking now, but as everyone said to me, but once the pain had eased off, I didn't mind. But that's why I'm ringing you, because the pain was something really horrific now. And somebody said to me, there was a girl on the paper lately that it happened to, and I was saying to myself, well, if I had to publicise this, maybe I would have spared that girl.
I was mentioning when your email came in, I have a memory now, 6, 8, 10 weeks ago, of it happening in the UK, and I think it was one of their morning programmes that somebody came on and said, oh, you want to give them tips and hints, did you know you can poach an egg in a microwave? And they boiled up the water. I don't think they put it in a cup or a bowl, a breakfast bowl, put it in the microwave. But you have to, and as you say, a lot of microwaves don't have precise, you have to turn the dial and there's 1 minute and you're guessing what's 50 seconds. But another microwave, you can tap in 50 seconds. It did take 50 seconds. You said it should only take 30 seconds.
Well, I don't know how long I put it on for, you know, with the man.
So how are you now, Margaret?
Well, do you know, I'm fine again, Joe. Luckily, I have good healing skin. But the dermatologist gave me a very good cream now to wear, because I'm not allowed out in the sun now. He said to me that it's the same as getting a facelift, you know, that I have all new young skin and I have to be very careful of it now, you know. And I love going out in the sun, but... for this year anyway, I'll have to stay out of the sun. But all my skin turned black. I think that was because of the cream. It all peeled off. And my daughter-in-law used to come up, Suzanne, every evening and clean my face with cotton wool and water to get off all the old skin. I'll tell you, there's a lot more photographs I could send you, Joe. It was horrific. And that's why I don't really want it on
social media,
FaceTime or anything like that, because Facebook, because I don't want my grandchildren to see me, because it would frighten them, you know.
Okay.
But I just wanted to warn people, because it still is on YouTube for people to look up.
Now, apparently, but again, I don't want to be recommending this because I don't do... They say this is from Coop. Microwave eggs cooked in their shells will explode, obviously.
But this wasn't in the shell.
You cracked it into a cup of boiling water. Even out of their shells, eggs can and may explode in the microwave because rapid heating causes a build-up of steam. Always use a wooden pick or tip of a knife to break the yolk membrane of an unbeaten egg before microwaving it to allow the steam to escape. But you're adamant the egg didn't explode. Wasn't like what propelled the water out of the bowl?
Well, it did explode in the cup. Yes,
the egg did. Okay, so
the egg didn't hit my face.
So it was the explosion of the egg that was the propulsion for the water to send it.
Yes.
Because if you put a, I don't do it, but if I presume people put a bowl of water in the microwave and they take out the boiling water, it doesn't explode in your face. So it was the egg that was the active ingredient.
But if you're going to YouTube, Joe, on how to microwave the egg, that information you read out there now is not on it.
I don't know if that information is correct either.
Told me since that is correct. That
You pricked the yolk of the egg.
The egg, but I never heard of that before until the chef said it to me. My accident, you know. But what I would assume if you did that, that would burst the yolk. But the seemingly, I suppose, I don't know. But I tell you, I won't be poaching an egg in a microwave anyway, so it won't matter to me.
Yeah.
Even though Helen went off and bought a digital one since, but I've been poaching my eggs the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to.
It must be the hardest thing to do with an egg. You can scramble an egg fairly easy. You can boil an egg. You can fry an egg. But one of the hardest things to do with an egg is poach it properly, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, people say put in a drop of vinegar and get the water going in an anti-clockwise direction or a clockwise direction or whatever, and then spoon in your egg. But I've never got it to work properly. But anyway.
One of the girls got me a little rubber thing now to put into the saucepan and put drop your egg in it, and that's quite successful.
What do you do? What do you do?
It's a little rubber, what do you call it? Little rubber thing you put in.
Oh, I've seen them, yeah. You sit the egg into it.
Put the egg into it and put that sitting in the boiling water and that works quite well, yeah.
And thankfully boiling water accidents have reduced dramatically since the cordless kettles came in. Because remember the kettles with the cord? And children used to grab the cord and they'd pull the kettle down on top of the most horrific.
And those kettles didn't switch themselves off.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Well, Margaret, please mind yourself. It's a solitary... One part of me is, I'm sorry we can't tweet a photograph because you're worried about upsetting your grandchildren. But even that, a statement in itself should explain to people how awful and difficult it was.
I know, yeah. But hopefully people are listening to you today and that they will realise the danger. And thanks for ringing me, Joe.
Okay, thanks, Margaret. That's Margaret Fitzharris. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Philippa Cottle. Philippa, good afternoon. Hospitals and what happened?
Hello, Joe. Now, my son, about 18 months ago, was cycling home from work and came off his bike, and he was taken into Vincent's. And,
there's about seven Vincent's hospitals in Ireland. It's not your fault.
Mount Marion. And
Dublin, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and he had to have an MRI, so they cut him out of his Lycra.
Okay.
But there's a hutch under the beds, you know, that they wheel you into emergency, where they put they put your bag and the rest of your stuff. And when I came to pick him up later that evening, you know, they hadn't lost his phone or anything like that, but he rang me on his phone to say, would I bring some clothes in, because everything had disappeared.
Okay.
His bag, his work clothes, everything. And at the time, we were all very annoyed, but we were so relieved he hadn't been badly injured
that we let it
drop. But I just wonder if there isn't something a bit more serious to be looked at by Vincent's in terms of security of personal belongings.
And what was missing?
Well, clothes, cycling gear, you know, helmet, shoes, goggles, that sort of thing, which were expensive to replace.
They are expensive, yeah.
You know, at the time we were annoyed. I went back a couple of times to ask them to double check, which they did, but they couldn't find anything. So I don't know what's happened to it.
Philippa, was this before BC, before COVID?
Oh, yeah, this was BC when the emergency room was hopping. So, you know, I could hardly blame them for something going missing, and obviously lots of other people, members of the public in there too. But, that's what happened. I just when I was listening to your earlier callers today, I really brought that memory back to me.
Okay,
so I just thought I'd let you know.
And he's okay now, thankfully.
He's fine, thank God, yes.
Did he have a mobile phone with him, Philippa?
He did.
But he held on to that.
That wasn't missing, yeah.
That's the last thing they part with, isn't it?
Yeah.
They held that close to his chest so we could ring his mammy.
Exactly.
And she could comfort him. Thanks, Philippa. Philippa Cottle. John Horan, 51551 Washhands. John.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. What happened? An unusual one, to say the least.
Yeah, I thought it was too, Joe, but I made inquiries afterwards and it's apparently not that unusual. The old man, she was in her 90th year and it was February 2017 when she took a fall at home.
Okay.
and she just hurt her side. So I got her up to the nearest hospital. I don't know if I can mention the hospital or not.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
Tala Hospital.
Okay, great hospital, yeah.
Up in Tala, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got her, you know, admitted in there and she was being examined and that. But I went up the next day and her teeth had gone missing, top and bottom.
Her false teeth.
Yeah, false teeth, yeah. And she's very embarrassed, you know,
yeah,
as you would be.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I looked around and had a chat with the cleaning staff, nurses, no sign of them, gone.
Mm.
So I had to get a dentist out for three visits, to force them to measure up. Second visit, we had trial fitting. And the third visit, hopefully, is job done. And that cost €1,000.
So explain what you had to do, John. You had to bring a dentist out to the hospital.
Out to the hospital.
To measure up or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On the first call, it is a measure up show.
Okay.
The second one, then, it's a trial fitting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then
and
you
the
calibrate just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully the third one, then, is the final, you know, end the job, which it was, but it cost €1,000.
Okay.
But,
and did the what did the hospital say?
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Now, I fought Joe and I got forms off them and filled them in, but it took months. But I did get it back, eventually. But I did have to fight for it. But it was €1,000, Joe. The mother never came out of the hospital, actually. But it cost €1,000, Joe, to get the dentist out, three visits. And a brand new set of teeth, top and bottom. And I did get the money back, but it was months later. Yeah,
okay. And she passed away?
She passed, Joe, she passed. I got a call from some professor up there, or some bigwig, but he told me over the phone that the mother had passed away from HAP. Now, I thought it was a bad line. I didn't know what. I asked him, you know, he said, your mother died from HAP. H-A-P. And I said, no, I think maybe you're onto the wrong person or something. My old man only went in after a fall, you know, she hurt her side. And he said, no, and, you know he confirmed it.
What's
happened? That's what I asked, but eventually, and I did have to prod him on that, it's hospital-acquired pneumonia. That's what killed her.
That's what I told you.
H-A-P.
I'm just wondering, on a general note, John, are false... Why do so many people in Ireland have false teeth?
Misspent youth, Joe, I think.
It's not.
Unless it's
where the dental service
the
is so bad, well, we flew right in the water,
yeah,
which helps.
Yeah.
That's probably
why
the number of people with false teeth is decreasing dramatically. But what was it? Was it just poverty in the 20s, 30s, 40s that people...
I think so, Joe. And
people too inclined to...
No, it turned me off, Joe, when I was a school kid. The dentist would have, literally, he'd have a knee in your chest and a fag hanging out of his mouth. And
in the dispensary.
Yeah. You know why the students? Because we hadn't got the money to go
to
a proper. So it was the students' clinic that you went to. And they sort of, they half knew what they were doing and half bluffed it. But it turned me off them for life, Joe. And it's so much so that I think in the past 3 years, I'd managed to get four of my own teeth out myself, which were troubling me and giving me hell. And I worked on them for weeks.
Just hang on, John, just to be clear, you're not talking about Tally. You're talking about 70 years ago. About young kids.
Like,
yeah, sorry, you're not talking about Tala.
I knew you weren't talking about Tala.
Yeah, back in the 30s and 40s,
you know.
Back in the day. Yeah, I know that.
I went through it
myself. And how do you know the difference between a working class person and a person who has money in Ireland? You know it through their teeth. But anyway, things have changed. I was asking the question, I'll ask it again in case people didn't hear it listening, that why were there so many people in Ireland in the 20s, I think I said the 20s, 30s, 40s and 50s were false teeth. But anyway, God rest your mother, John, and I'm sorry, it was a HAP, hospital acquired pneumonia.
HAP, hospital acquired pneumonia.
Okay, you mind yourself, John. Thanks
right,
indeed.
Joe, thanks
bye-bye.
For that.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Mark Freeman, good afternoon, Mark. Mark, what happened?
I received an email on Saturday, but I didn't discover it until last night, from scammers that, well, they said they bought me details online that you can quite easily buy nowadays, is what the email said. And it said they have the camera on my phone, the camera on my laptop, and the keyboard, and anything I use that I recently used my email address in. They have a virus on them. It's pointless in changing your passcodes at this stage or throwing away your equipment because it'll just attach the new stuff. And they want Bitcoin of 1,400 Bitcoin dollars, US dollars, it says, 1,400 US dollars worth. And they'll delete the files that they have. They said your favourite sites to look at are pornographic nature. And we've seen you through your camera looking at these, and we're going to release them to all your friends on social media if you don't pay us the money. It's quite detailed. It's very long, the email. But, I mean, I just ignored it, and I was going to ignore it anyway. But, I mean, somebody might pay these people. You know?
And what were they saying if you did not pay?
If you did not pay, they said they have all my social media. They have all my friends. My phone number, my contact list. They said they'd been monitoring me for weeks, and they're going to release all this stuff
to
my friends on social media and all these videos that they have.
They're going to try and embarrass you. How much were they looking for again?
1,400 and change of US dollars in Bitcoin. But the actual email, I copied and pasted it into a WhatsApp and sent it to my wife. And she never received it. She just receives a load of jumbled letters. So it's encrypted.
And were you tempted to tell the Gardaí?
Well, I didn't know what to do, to be honest with you. Well, I wasn't going to go to the Gardaí because since this thing with the HSE, since they were hacked their computers, I don't know whether it's just me, but my phone has been bamboozled. I got three or four phone calls over the last 2 weeks from a Dublin number. And when you answer them, it's a recorded voice.
Social welfare.
Social welfare. You need to press this.
Well,
and
you
click
don't.
This
just forget about that. Just
yeah.
I've done it so many times. Well. Have you got the DHL one yet? Your parcel has arrived. Please contact us.
I didn't get that one, but I got one from a fella in England with the same surname as me, and I have a long lost uncle that died.
Ah, yeah.
And I mean, since the HSE thing, I've been bamboozled with it. And only recently, a woman rang me from the Cancer Society of Ireland, she said she was from. She had an English accent. English was her first language. She was from England, I think.
Well, the thing to say is, okay, the Irish Cancer Society, we all know you, great reputation, great charity. We all know Avril Power. I'll ring you back in a few minutes. That's your number. That's all you have to say. And look up the number of the Irish Cancer Society on the web and ring and ask for Avril. She will talk to you. But if you think when you're getting a call, it's suspicious, which a lot of those social welfare, those texts that are coming in the last few days are, the bank ones, which we did in great detail, just ignore them. If anyone wants to contact you so urgently, they can drop you a note. They all have your address, they say.
Yeah.
Drop me a note.
This email was just so detailed, Joe. I mean, it was reading it. I mean, it was very long. It was very detailed, and I just thought to myself, somebody's going to read that, and somebody's going to pay. I don't even know how you pay someone in Bitcoin. I don't know anything about it.
I've no idea. I don't think it's a lot of these names and numbers they have. Anyway, they're chancing their arm after the HSE thing, I think. But Mark, well done. You just face them down and basically told him to get lost. Teresa, good afternoon in Santry in Dublin.
How are you?
Good, thanks. What happened to you, Teresa?
Well, I'd say the same email as Mark about time last. Really frightened me when I saw it first, but the one thing I knew just looking at my laptop, so I did not have any evidence of me doing it.
I'm glad you got an email, because if they'd phoned you, they wouldn't be able to understand you. No fault of your own, but because of the line. So we're going to try and improve the line over this ad break.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Teresa lives in Santry in Dublin. We're talking about be initiated by Mark getting these emails or phone calls saying, we've caught you watching porn, please give us money or we tell all your family and mates and contacts. Yeah. Teresa, what was the email you got said?
Yeah, it said the exact same thing, Joe. Okay. And I, as I said, I was frightened when I read the email because it had an old password or something on it as proof that it knew me. Right now, I contacted the guards that evening because it was nighttime when I got it, and they asked me to go down to my local guard station in the morning, which I did.
Okay.
Brought a printout of the email, and the guard said to me, "There's companies," he said, "that buy old passwords." He said so. That's how they had that password, and it was a valid password that I used to use. And then the guard said to me, look, that I wasn't to worry about it. He said even I got one, as in he himself had gotten one. But and nothing ever came of it, Joe. But as I said to you earlier, but I think you couldn't hear me with the bad line.
Okay,
I'm on a landline now at the moment.
Great.
I knew I hadn't done anything, and I'm the only one that uses my laptop. But it's frightening when you get it. And actually, Joe, it's not related to Mark's one, but I also did have another call recently, a scam call. Now, I haven't said this to your researcher, but if you like, I can tell you about it, because this one was
actually
frightening.
That
I got a call about a month ago, and it was supposed to be from Amazon, and it said that my subscription had been
the
taken out of my account. But, Joe, in this case, it was a bad day for me, and I actually allowed them onto my phone. I let them set up an app that allowed them access to my phone. But what happened was my debit card immediately popped up on the screen, which was in the wallet of my phone. And the minute I saw it, I said to the caller, I'm not happy with this call. I'm terminating it. And I terminated it. I removed the app. I rang the bank straight away. But I actually gave somebody access to my phone, which, I mean, it was really stupid. If somebody else told me they did this, I would say, how could you be so stupid? But if somebody catches you at a vulnerable moment...
Yeah, I know.
You can't.
Yeah.
So those two things have
and
happened
did,
to
what,
me.
Did he do anything untoward with...
Absolutely nothing, Joe, because I copped it straight away.
Reason
I copped it was because they immediately went to my wallet. And when they did, my card popped up on the screen, but that meant they could see it and I could see it, right? So I immediately terminated the call. They tried ringing me back, and it was a local number. And do you know what's funny? I said to them, but Amazon don't have my landline number, because they rang me on a landline. I didn't give my landline number to Amazon at any stage. But I just think, Joe, at the moment there are a huge amount of scams going on, and people need to be extremely careful. And I would be somebody I would consider to be very streetwise when it comes to my phone and my email. The one about the Bitcoin, nothing came of that. And as I said to you, I reported it to the guards. But to think that I was so careless with the call about Amazon, because I knew my Amazon subscription wasn't due till about October. And they were basically telling me, we've taken the subscription from your account, and I'm about to allow them into my phone to so-called return the money to me, but they were actually going to wipe my bank account or take whatever.
And
they...
remember, all of these organisations that are contacting you have got a physical address for you. So you just say, okay, send me, if you want to say something to me, send it to me in the post. And they say, what's your address? You say, sure, you have it there in front of you. Thanks very much, Teresa.
Thanks
Mark Freeman. John Morgan, joe@rt.ie. John, we're told Dublin City Council have announced... more litter bins, more public areas this weekend in the capital anyway. I know Cork apparently, Oliver Plunkett Street is apparently a wonder to behold at the minute with it's completely pedestrianised, and they put up these what look like magnificent umbrellas, large umbrellas if you follow me, like something out of an impressionist painting all over the street, and it looks, one, to give a bit of shelter, and two, to brighten up the place. Apparently it's working, but there are downsides as we heard a few weeks ago. John Morgan is in Dundalk. John, what's your situation?
How
are you,
Joe?
Please. Good, thanks.
Well, I'll tell you, Joe, the local bids office, and bids apparently it stands for business initiative district or something, but they themselves in conjunction with the council put these what they call parklets. Now, for all intents and purposes, they're like decking, we'd say, and
But
they're little build-outs on the street where, say, you take up instead of two car parking spaces, you now have a little enclosed area that could be have seating for a restaurant or have artificial glass or with a grass indeed, not glass. And they look very well, but there is a problem. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're not accessible for wheelchair users. I'm a wheelchair user. You can't get onto them. So when I went to see the local bid, I said it to him, and he says, "Oh, never thought of that. We'll get it fixed." And he promised me it'd be fixed. So the day before yesterday, myself and another friend of mine who's also a wheelchair user, we said, "Well, sure, try these out and see what happens." And I don't know who made the mistake, whether it was the manufacturer or whoever, but they did put a ramp in, Joe, but the ramp is that steep. What's called the gradient is that steep.
Okay.
And when you try to get up, the foot plates, the front foot plates of the wheelchair get stuck. So for us, they're actually still not accessible, you know.
Remember, like, they should have thought of it, because not just for wheelchair users, but for people who are slightly infirm, for people maybe on a walking stick, for people with buggies, for people
who are visually impaired, you know. Like, even someone would say with limited vision, you nearly wouldn't see it's the difference between the footpath and the, would say, when you get onto the decking, as I'd call it.
And
but
what,
like,
about,
not only that, Joe, what annoyed me... What annoyed me in a sense was that, as I said, the council are involved in it, in the, you know, supplying these and obviously giving permission to put them up. But, like, the legislation say that all government bodies, semi-state bodies, local authorities, when they're buying a service or products, they have to be accessible for everyone. They have to be totally inclusive. And, like, there we are now. You know, if you were to come down to the door tomorrow, you can't say to you, "Joe, come on, we'll go for a cup of tea."
Because you can't, you reckon.
You know,
and what about the streets being narrowed?
Well, yeah. Well, actually, what they've done here in the Dock, now, I have to give them credit. They've done a massive job in the main street. What they've actually tried to do is they've made the road carriages smaller, thinner, or narrower, I should say, and more foot space. But again, like our little group, we made the submission that we wanted one put outside one of the local banks, because the beauty of it was beside three of the banks and the main post office. Now, they put one there, but they took one away from across the road. And, like, we've an ageing population, an awful lot of more people are getting the blue badges, using the, you know, the disabled, which is right.
Yeah,
so,
of course, yeah.
But, you know, and, like, again, the recommendation is that for every 100 car spaces, 15 of them should be the blue bays. And of that 50, should be long enough to accommodate a small minibus. You know, so the regulations are there, but it's just, I don't know, it just seems to be whatever way the council interprets it.
Yeah, well, things are moving fairly quickly, so the council should be reminded. Shouldn't have to be, but should
and
be reminded.
The
by the way, we all should, everyone.
Yeah, and the reason why I obviously got on to your researcher as well, I was watching news there one of the nights, and that's a couple of weeks ago, and they were putting them in there. I could be wrong, but it looked like sore. I remember I used to have to go to the old Richmond Hospital every couple of months, and my father would be driving. We'd have to go through his swords because there was no motorways then. But from what I remember of swords, it looked like swords. And even now on the local radio station here in Dundalk, they had said that Meath County Council were going to be installing them. So I just got in touch with the local radio station and just said, "Well, listen, don't make the same mistake that they made here in Dundalk. You know, just make sure that they are." So, like I say, it's lack of consultation as well, Joe. Like, if someone had contacted myself or someone else in a wheelchair and said, "Listen, what kind of a gradient?" Like, the gradient is the slope, you know, going from the footpath up. But as I said, the slope was that steep that when I tried, and actually I have a video, and I was going to send it on to your actually after August, that, you know, you see the foot plates, you know, the foot plates front of the wheelchair. They get caught. So you can't get up, you know.
Okay.
I often wonder, there's a lack of awareness.
Well, it is lack of awareness, and as I say, what's beneficial to everybody, including yourself and myself, extends to more and more people these days. So,
yeah.
John Morgan, and thanks in Dundalk. Good reminder.
Thank you very much,
Helen, back to items in hospitals. You were in the Mater Hospital in Dublin, Helen.
Yes, I was, Joe, in December. And my phone went missing, and there was an all-out alert to find it because I needed to get it. And It was wrapped up in the bed covers and taken to the Ellis Laundry in Potter's Road in Dunleary.
Okay.
And my son kept ringing the phone. He didn't take his finger off it. He just kept on it all the time. And by some chance, one of the men there who was doing the laundry, his name was Dan.
Good man,
and
Dan.
And he heard the phone ringing and he searched through the laundry baskets and he found my phone.
Brilliant.
And answered my son, who really thought that it had been stolen at the time.
Yeah.
But it was great to get it back. So it can happen.
But Helen, was your phone laundered?
No, it wasn't. It was before it went in. Oh, weren't
you so
lucky?
Because if it gone into the washing machine, that was...
Oh, that was the end of it.
I presume, is that the end of a mobile phone if you accidentally put it through a 2-hour wash?
I don't think I can answer, Joe.
That's so I'm sure that happens. I'm sure people of a morning when they decide to strip the beds, people going to sleep with their phones in the bed, the phone gets wrapped up in one of the sheets or the quilts or whatever, and into the washing machine it goes.
It can go, yeah. Well, mine was saved. Yeah,
and you're through the great action of your son.
Yes,
and the man's name in the laundry, you think, was Dan.
Dan.
And what was the name of the laundry?
Ellis Laundry in Potter's Road in Dunleary.
Well, great, great company, great tradition. Dan the man. Dan is the man, Helen.
Dan is the
and
man.
Come here,
and thank
more,
you very
more
much,
importantly,
Dan.
You're in the matter for a reason.
I was. I had a kidney problem and it was serious enough. So, but I'm okay again now, thank God.
And you were with the renal unit in the matter.
Yes,
great unit. Great people in there.
Indeed.
Great people.
That's true.
Really skilled. Okay, that's Helen, true. Thanks
thank
indeed.
Thank you, Joe, for taking
and stay
the call.
Well, stay well. Thanks for making the call. Breed Ní Hanrachan. Breed, how are you?
Yes,
Beaumont.
I'm good.
Beaumont.
I'm good.
Beaumont Hospital.
Yes, Beaumont Hospital, who were fantastic, I have to say.
Yeah,
my
great.
Dad was admitted by ambulance. I accompanied him, A&E. He was seriously unwell, ended up in resus, and I'd been in and out often enough with him at that point to know the drill, that, you know, the patient's clothes get put into a green plastic bag. Anybody who's been through the system will recognise what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular time, he was taken up to ICU, was out of it for a while. When he came to the following day and had recovered sufficiently, he started looking for his clothes. And he had most of his own teeth, but he did have a plate on the top. And no sign of the clothes, car keys, his shoes, he dressed well, his jacket, all his good stuff missing. Now, I searched, I went back down to A&E, I searched everywhere. No sign of the clothes. Mm. So Dad passed away about 2 years after that. And I was in school one morning in my office, phone call comes in from patient liaison in Beaumont. And very nice lady started off with saying, this might be a very upsetting call for you. And, you know, your dad was here at A&E, and another lady who was admitted at the same time and was also in resus that night had died that night.
Okay.
And she was ringing to tell me that the family of this lady had 5 years after she had passed away, gone through her stuff, had opened
five,
the green bag
five,
that they had been given.
5 years, Breed. I know it's difficult. 5 years later. Yeah.
And that this family had opened their mother's, as they thought, green bag and discovered it was full of my father's clothes.
Ah.
So back up to Beaumont I went that day, and she gave me the bag. And she said that the other family were very upset. They thought we'd be furious, that we'd be terribly upset.
Yeah.
And all I could think of was I was so grateful to them because they could so easily have thrown that bag in a skip and never said anything.
Yeah.
So in a way, this is a chance, if they're listening, anybody who's listening and recognises the story, to say to thank them so much. Now, it was, like the man who spoke about the teeth earlier, it did cause a huge amount of distress because when Dad came to, he couldn't eat because he had his teeth and he wasn't fit to be discharged and all the rest of it. But 5 years later, we did get those clothes back.
It's not very good.
So, often those green bags go missing or they get misplaced or whatever. Maybe not everybody has the courage to come back and say, listen, we took the wrong bag.
I know families are grieving. You know, the other way, they won't go into the bedroom where the person died or lived, indeed.
Yes.
They won't open the wardrobe. They won't get rid of the clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they're grieving. So it's perfectly understandable. It's a long time, but it's perfectly understandable.
Yeah, but it was so emotional to actually open the bag and see you know, all his clothes. Because at that point, we kind of processed everything. And I had another chance to have a really good cry, which probably did me the world of good.
Okay, okay. Breed Gurumaga, that's Breed Nihan Rakan.
All throats, Joe. Come on.
Anya Lynch is in the UK. Anya, the poached egg hack going wrong. Get the advice was, you can tell us where you saw it, because this is where I now know I read about it subsequently. People, you boil a kettle of water, people are saying they put the boiling water into a cup, you crack the egg in, and then you put the egg in the microwave, and within 50 seconds, 40 seconds or whatever, you're supposed to have a lovely poached egg. What happened to you, Anya?
I'm actually just up in the north here, Joe, just outside
Neary. Okay, just before people come on and crucify me, it just says Mobile UK on your ID, so you're Northern Ireland. Go ahead, Anya.
We are just outside Neary. Yeah. I had seen the hack on Loose Women. I watched it on a Thursday afternoon, and on the Saturday morning I decided to go up and make breakfast for me and my husband.
And what was the hack? And what do they do? Did they do cookery or... tips on
they
Loose
did.
Women.
They were doing like TikTok hacks on Loose Women that day, and it was one of the panelists had just put tap water into a mug, cracked an egg into it, and put it into the microwave for 60 seconds, and out came this perfectly poached egg. Now, for the life of us, between the two of us, we can't poach an egg.
Yeah, not a feeling.
I tried it, and the first one was overdone when I left it out, so I took a different mug out, just threw that mug in the sink, took a different mug out, did the exact same thing again, but put it on for 50 seconds this time instead of the full minute.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a few seconds before I opened the door of the microwave, because I have two young kids here, so I wasn't just able to get to it straight away. And when I opened the door of the microwave, I lifted the mug out. The egg exploded in the cup and spread the scalding boiling water right up my chest, under my chin and under my face. We were crafty enough now. We were straight down to the chemist. My husband ran down to get burns, compresses and stuff for them. But...
yeah.
I suffered very, very bad burns, Joe. I was blistering right up. Face was bandaged up for a few days. Couldn't open my eye for a few days with the scalding water. But it was a hard lesson learned, but I'll not try it again.
How long were you in hospital for?
Well, I was in for about 6 or 7 hours in Daisy Hill. They were fantastic. And we're so blessed where we are. We're 10 minutes in the road, but that 10-minute car journey that morning felt
Did they by any chance mention that this has happened a lot since this TikTok hack on television?
I think I was the first that seen in Daisy Hill. I posted it on my social media on Facebook, and it was picked up then by a national newspaper without my permission, I must say. They didn't ask me first.
Okay.
And it was picked up by a few news outlets on social media, and a lot of people contacted me to say that the same thing happened to them.
Wow.
There was actually a crowd from Germany contacted me to... It was a media company from Germany. Germany contacted me to say that it's happened over there quite a lot.
Right.
And they wanted me to interview for it, but I said no. I received a lot of trolling online from posting the story, so I just said, oh, Joe, it was horrendous. Hard few days.
And what?
People sent me messages telling me that obviously it wasn't a boiling water. My husband beat me up.
That
I should have my children taken off me.
But you know, if you put it on Facebook, unless it's a totally... aren't you publishing it if you put it on Facebook?
Well, apparently so. According to the Daily Mirror published it off Facebook, and according to them, once it's in the public domain, they have permission to publish it in the newspaper. We didn't know anything about it, that it was going into press.
Well, I tell you,
my neighbour told me about it.
I know you've WhatsApped a photograph privately to us. It is horrific what happened to you, Anya. It is absolutely horrific.
I had a very
horrific.
Bad burn. I was very lucky, thank God. I've no scarring, but
so
I'm Peter, that
people
down to
are just
Hill.
Better off, no matter what. Don't poach an egg in the microwave, please.
Get a poached egg in a cafe. Go out for your breakfast. Treat yourself. Yeah. That's my new motto.
And get a big Ulster fry, a bit of a soda farl, and whatever else that's
exactly.
going.
Exactly. You can't hurt
make a day of it.
Egg.
Okay. Good to meet you, Margaret. On you, Lynch. Glad to hear you're back. You're back on your feet again. Annette Egan produced Damien Chanel and sound. Richie Byrne research. Maeve Mooney for the last time today. Brilliant colleague. And moving to a different part of the organisation. Well done, Maeve. Maeve Mooney was our BCO. And Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs. Kia.
Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.